You're listening to The Election Show on URN. Activities Officer.
Hello and welcome to The Pulse, your activities question time special. I'm Meg Ashdown and I'm joined by Becky Player, Emily Mills and Tom Burke. Remember, if you have any questions for our candidates, you can send them in at urn1350.net as a free web text, tweet us at urnpulse or send us a Facebook message at urnnews. So a general question just to start with to open up to the floor. So how would you target second year students and returning students from abroad to take an interest when they come back? So through welcome fair type things. Emily, if we start with you.
So with welcome fairs, I feel like this year it wasn't really organised as well as it could be. The fact that all the societies and student-run services were in different places kind of meant that some students didn't actually get the reach that they needed to kind of get the full scope of what societies we actually have. So having them all in one place, having kind of more events to showcase what our societies have so that people can see what they're about before they kind of join them, I think that's really important. And just kind of engaging more students, because obviously Freshers' Fair is usually kind of a first year kind of thing, but actually promoting it for second, third years, people coming back from their year abroad.
I was actually part of the welcome committee this year, so it took over from week one, and obviously that's when we were told that it wouldn't be held in one location anymore, and we did sort of raise issue with that, and a few societies did. But I think that this year, from talking to societies and writing my manifesto, a lot of them definitely struggled with the sign-ups. One society said that they normally have about 200 and they actually had 75, which just shows that it isn't the best way of getting exposure out there, especially for societies that are maybe smaller and more like niche. People sort of try them out because they've seen them, you know, they've come across them. So I think definitely that's why on my manifesto it's to bring it back into one location, because that's something that was voiced. I also think that in order to get more students engaged, there needs to be more try-it sessions throughout the year as well, and better publicity of those so that students know that they're going on. Because I don't think it's just about welcome, I think it's about continuing that throughout the year.
I definitely think that the Freshers' Fair could be, you know, better organised, things could be, you know, much more clearly laid out. So you know, something as simple as, you know, putting signposts to where, you know, where different, like, sort of categories of societies are. So say you want to find out where the campaign societies are, literally have signposts around, you know, the Portland building or wherever we're holding Freshers' Fair, so people just know where to go. Is a really simple first step. But I also think something for returning students who've been studying abroad, a good idea would be to let them sort of carry on their membership from their, say, their first year, and try and organise the society activities to be done better in, you know, wherever it is they're studying abroad, whether in the Ningbo or Malaysian campuses. I think there's a real opportunity there to help the societies carry on their activities that they've been doing in the UK for their students abroad.
And remember that if you have any questions for our candidates, you can text us in at urn1350.net, tweet us at urnpulse, or send us a Facebook message at urnnews. So, Becky, you talk about try-it events in halls. Mm-hmm. Isn't this basically the point of Welcome Fair?
I would say that Welcome Fair is about getting the original sort of engagement. But there are a lot of students, especially if you're in your first year, you're focusing on, like, making friends, settling in, trying to find your way around the city. And maybe not top of that list is going along with your lectures to all of those things. Also, try it is an opportunity for all years. It's not just for first years, it's for second and third years as well. So I think that having them on campus is good, but to bring them into halls as well, you're getting students really early engaged in them. So I sort of spoke with some activities reps, and it's something that they were quite keen to sort of, like, get involved in as well. And I think it would just create more sort of links between societies and the JCRs. And it would just mean that students don't have to go out of their way to try activities. They can sort of do them, like, really early on. So that's why the try session's there, but I kind of want to expand that further.
So, Emily, sticking with Welcome Week, you say that you want to improve the advertisement of Welcome Week, but isn't this something that sort of happens as a national thing? Everyone knows that they go to university, they have the Welcome Fair, they have Freshers' Fair. So how would you plan to advertise it more when it's such, like, an ingrained part of university culture already?
I feel like all students know that when they come to university there will be some sort of welcome fair, but it's about promoting where our societies are in order for them to increase their memberships. Like Becky said, quite a lot of societies this year found, with the welcome fair being in various places around campus, they didn't get this kind of reach to students. So it's about promoting it better for not only the students so that they can join societies, but also promoting it for societies in order to reach those students.
So, Becky, you talk about having Welcome Festival in one location. Mm-hmm. From speaking to the student union officers of 2013 to 2014, as well as Anne Harrod Smith, she said that before she even came into office, it had been decided where Welcome Fair was, and she had very little influence in where it took place. So how would you effectively implement this policy?
Well, I think that that's something that societies have already said that they want. So that's something that should, they said it's already in like the planning stages already when I spoke to them about it. So that's something that should already be in being thought about. If I was to be elected into office, that's something that I'd maybe want to work with Rob and speak to Rob about as well, so that it could be done in place, because it is a problem with Welcome that the activities officer sort of leaves and starts sort of all sort of same around that time. So there's not really, there's like a limited input, but I think that it's about working with each activities officer to try and make sure that what the society say they need is happening, and then again to work with the next one next year, to make sure that that continues.
So, Emily, you talk about organising more events to showcase talents and accomplishments of societies and SRSs, but isn't this already what happens at Welcome Fair? How would it be different from Welcome Fair?
So this is about showcasing societies' talents and achievements throughout the year. This isn't just about, obviously Welcome Fair is a very good way of showcasing their talents and stuff, but it's about doing this throughout the year so that they can increasingly reach students and get those memberships, not only in the first week but also like throughout the academic year, and also kind of engaging with students whenever they kind of feel like they want to join. I feel like first week of university, sometimes people are a bit overwhelmed and don't really want to. I mean, when I was going around Welcome Fair, I promised to sign up to millions of societies and I just kind of never got around to it. So by having these events to showcase what everyone's doing, not only do you kind of appreciate the achievements that societies are doing, but you also give students a chance to actually get more involved.
So in a sense, it's going to be like the sports festival in the sports hall, which was this year, except for all of the societies.
Yeah.
Tom, you say that in relation to societies and sports, you want more activities on the weekends. But could you not argue that, especially in relation to sports, this is already happening?
I think there are, you know, a lot of sports activities happening on the weekend. The problem is that there are a lot of, especially postgraduates, people on placement courses, and some people with, so some smaller degrees, they find that the scheduling for, you know, so much society events and sports activities, like I say, happens normally on Wednesday afternoon. However, you know, these people are, you know, normally working at this point. So I think there should be, you know, yes, more on the weekends, but also they can have more in the evenings during the weekdays. So as long as they have, you know, a wide variety of when they timetable their events for. So they have, yes, some early on weekends, some later on in the day, and the same for the weekdays. It means that everybody will have an opportunity at some point to attend whatever events the societies and sports clubs are holding.
Can you argue, though, that students on placements who tend to be medical students and sort of courses like that, they're already maybe accommodated for through things like MedSoc or the IMS League?
If that is the case, then it clearly isn't being advertised properly to students, because a lot of students that I've spoke to think that this is a problem. There are procedures in place, and there is a, you know, like you say, a society in place to help students, like, you know, medical students, attend these society events. Clearly more needs to be done to make sure that students know about this, and any issues they have with attending them as they are can be resolved better.
Becky, you say that you want graphic design students to help societies advertise themselves, but don't societies already have roles for this through publicity secretaries already?
Some societies will have publicity secretaries, and they do a good job, but I think that the union can be supporting them further in that role. It's something that Rob Jennings tried to do when he had his, he wanted like software, graphic design software, but that is quite costly, and actually there are students already in the student body who can design graphics, and they just promote the events in a way that is maybe seen as like more professional. More people are willing to sort of like engage with the event if they sort of see like the graphics designed well. Gives people more like confidence in the event, I think. And so we should be supporting these publicity roles within the committees to publicise their events. And I think that by creating links to the students who can already do that, you're not only allowing them to build their own graphic design portfolio, you're also allowing the students to access those kind of that skill set that they need, and is something that is needed within societies.
But can you argue that maybe having graphic design students taking a more forward role in all of the societies, isn't that stopping students a little bit from sort of branching out themselves, learning how to do new skills for themselves? It's almost like getting all math students to be treasurers on societies.
No, it's not necessarily graphic design students, it's students with graphic design skills. So you'll find those students, you know, in whichever course, but it's about, you know, sort of reaching out to those students and saying, do you want to build your portfolios? And there's nothing to stop committees trying to do their own graphics if they want to. That's not the point of it. It's if someone doesn't feel confident in doing it, then they're able to find a student within our network that can help them do that.
So, Emily, you talk about a welfare in societies idea, and Becky, you also have a point on welfare services for students heavily involved in societies. Could I just open up to the floor what you would do to help welfare in societies? Emily, if we start with you.
Yeah, so my idea is about the implementation of a welfare in societies scheme. So this kind of goes off from welfare in sports. And the welfare and sports scheme has been so successful in kind of raising awareness of mental health issues within kind of the realm of sports, as well as kind of showing the importance of partaking in sports. So I feel like it's really important to have this structure within the societies and student-run services, because at the moment, obviously, some societies do have a welfare rep, but there's no kind of across-the-board structure to implement welfare services, and also to allow the students on the committee to have the knowledge of the services that the uni has. And I think that's really important to kind of put that information out there so that committee members can help society members if they need it.
For me personally, I think it's about, like, I agree with a lot of Emily said there, it's about raising the awareness for our societies that there is the support there if they need it through, you know, we've got fantastic services, we've got Nightline, we've got Student Minds, they're all fantastic helping students, but it's about letting societies know that if they're sort of struggling with their commitments to, you know, their society and their work, that there is someone there to support them. Looking at the information that was given to us in like writing our manifesto as to what stops students in getting involved in committee positions and being more heavily involved in society, is the biggest factor is that they're worried about not being able to commit enough time to their course, and obviously that could lead to stress, and I think it's really important that we support students through that, because we should be encouraging students to be involved and supporting them every way we can.
But would you not say that getting involved in a society is kind of inevitable at some point? Student is either going to pick that, yeah, I love doing this, I'm going to dedicate a lot of time to this, or I'm going to prioritise my course. Isn't that just part of life that students are either going to say? Maybe those students who are saying, OK, I don't want to do a committee position, those are the students who have prioritised their course, whereas the students who aren't prioritising their course are more likely to be the students who can balance their time well.
I don't think we can make assumptions about that decision that they've made. You know, some people are going to be more focused on their course, and that's fantastic. They're really engaged with their course. But some students want to do both, and we shouldn't just suggest that, you know, they're not doing it because they want to focus on their course and they only want to do that. We need to give them the support to be able to make that decision. And I think that's what's key, really.
Tom?
Well, one of my manifesto points is that I'd really like to encourage more societies to have an equality, an equal opportunities and welfare as officer. I think it's really important that people in the society know that there's a dedicated officer on the society committee to help them deal with you know, any welfare issues that they have. Because especially if it, you know, if it's related to the activities and the structure of that society. So say if there's a problem of bullying, or there's, you know, students in societies feel that there's, you know, there's an institutional disadvantage that they're facing, they shouldn't be able to know that there's someone in the society who understands how it works, who knows, you know, who the people who go along to these things are, and they can, you know, they'll have a more, you know, on-hand experience and be able to help deal with the problem. Obviously, we shouldn't just, you know, say, oh, here's a token position on a committee, and then just leave them to it. We should obviously, you know, be giving them a lot of training. We should, you know, make sure they have good links with the Equal Opportunities and Welfare Officer for the SU. But yeah, no, I really agree with Emily and Becky when they talked about how we should expand the welfare and sports scheme, which has had, you know, great success, to welfare and societies. But I don't see why we can't have welfare officers on societies as well.
So, Emily, during this week, with all of the candidates we've spoken to, tutors and how involved tutors should be in their students' lives has come up time and time again. You also talk about tutors appreciating students' commitments and sort of making exceptions for this. But aren't tutors, at the end of the day, always going to be there, and they're going to primarily from their point of view, you're at university to learn. Sort of if you say to your tutor, oh, I'm going to not attend four seminars because, I don't know, for example, I'm doing URN, they're not going to take... I don't think there's a point where they're ever really going to take that as a valid excuse.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you there. It's kind of similar to us running for this role, actually. If we, because we've wanted to run for the role, we can't get extenuating circumstances. And I completely understand that because we ourselves have put ourselves forward and we know the costs and benefits of doing that. So it's not about necessarily making tutors be like, oh, giving them extra kind of... time or stuff like that. It's very much about just appreciating that students do have other commitments and just giving them a little bit of kind of appreciation for the fact that they are doing more than one thing and they are not simply just doing a course at university and they're actually getting involved in the greater student population.
So Becky, you talk about improving handovers between different committee members. How exactly would you go about doing this?
I think that when there are handovers and training for new committee members, we really need to be asking the members before them what was helpful for your role, what would you have needed. I think that there needs to be like more advice from the previous years in some sort of like formal handover, working with the training within the SU to sort of collaborate the two together, because obviously the SU have a wealth of experience with training more generally, but those students previously have a vested interest in that society or student group going on and achieving well, and they also really understand the requirements of the role and anything that they would have done better. So I think in the handovers we really need to be sort of combining the two of those.
But doesn't this already happen? Isn't there's a form which committee members fill out with sort of contact and details for even themselves if they think that they need to be contacted. I know myself, I was publicity secretary, I had to give details of the print shop where I've got things printed out, the description of the job. Do you not think that that's already enough?
It's being done and there's steps to do it, but I think that it can be improved further, and actually when there is training that you can sort of bring the previous committee with the union training services sort of together so that they're more working collaboratively to sort of improve the training for the new committees.
Right, so Tom, you talk about having an equal opportunities and welfare officer on every society. Isn't this a job for the Equal Opportunities and Welfare Officer to implement?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is something I'd like to work with them very closely. But obviously, in the role of as Activities Officer, we're dealing very lot with their societies and making sure that they can, be the best that they can be. So I think, encouraging societies with, working with the Equal Ops and Welfare Officer, encouraging them, each society, to have their own officer. I think it's a fairly common sense idea that means that students in those societies know that there's someone who they'll probably know quite personally that they can go to, and I think that's it's a bit more intimate and people will be able to feel a bit more comfortable going to someone they know about these issues rather than going to an SU officer who they might think, oh, it's too big a dish, it's too small of an issue to go for someone that important and so on. Although I do think that obviously if someone goes to the Equal Opportunities and Welfare Officer on their committee, on their society committee, then that is something that the Equal Ops and Welfare Officer for the SU should also have a chance of getting involved in and helping out with.
And do remember that if you want to send our candidates any questions, you can send us a free text at urn1350.net, you can tweet us at urnpolls, or you can send us a Facebook message at urnnews. So, Becky, you talk about improving links between volunteer centres and societies. Are you proposing that you're going to be the link for this?
Well, I met with the Student Volunteer Centre because I've worked with them before on a number of occasions, and I kind of wanted to get their perspective on activities. And I think that there can be improvements made to use the activities officers' networks with societies to say, we've got these volunteering opportunities if you want to get involved in them. I think that a lot of the time, students in societies will want to get involved in volunteer projects, whether that is for their employability or whether it's that because they genuinely believe in the cause, or a mixture of the both a lot of the time. But I think that there can be improvements made by the activities officer having like quite a important role in that, I think.
So Emily, in your manifesto you mention postgrads getting involved and getting more postgrads involved, but as an undergrad, do you really think that you can relate to postgrads as well as international students and those on satellite campuses who you also mention?
Yeah, in the construction of my manifesto I did have quite lengthy chats with Elliot and also the SB Guild, and it's from conversations with these people that I've had an understanding of what kind of it needs to be done to involve them more. this is kind of about increasing awareness of them. I mean, I was on my way to SB and there was a girl sitting at the bus stop, got chatting to her and kind of asked her why she was on Uni Park, and she said, oh, I was going to go to a society meeting but I couldn't find it, so I'm just going to go home now. And I was like, oh, so you didn't even go? And it's having that awareness of there are students who don't know the campus and who have never been here before, who may not know where they're going. And by having that awareness, you could maybe have buddy systems or committee members meeting them at the bus stops to take them there. And by doing that, I feel like you can increase membership, you can increase involvement and engagement dramatically.
How exactly would you propose to do that?
I think that's through kind of my point about training, just giving them the awareness that there are people who do have different needs, who do have different wants, that are not just necessarily undergraduates on Uni Park.
So, Tom, you talk about increased social media presence for the university, the SU and students' union officers, yet from research they've already got Instagram, Facebook and multiple Twitter accounts. So how would you make them more visible?
I would actually start posting the relevant messages from these social media accounts to the right places. So instead of just being like, you know, a blanket tweet or whatever, they can actually, target societies better, or post onto the Facebook groups of societies that the message is going to be relevant to. So, say there's an NHS rally that I saw at QMC and attended today. If there was, the community officer wants to see there are societies that might want to get involved in that, they should, they should tweet the message, they should post on Facebook, they should also post it or ask one of the committee members of relevant societies to post it on their Facebook pages. We all know that most students will use Facebook, and they'll check that far more regularly than emails and so on, but not all students follow the SU officers, whereas if they're a member of a society, then they'll almost certainly be following or being a member of that society's Facebook group. So I think that that's it's an easy way of making sure that instead of just sending the message out to everybody, you're directing it to the people who through membership of relevant societies will be more interested in whatever event is going on.
So Emily, you talk about integration between sports societies and SRSs. How exactly would you do this?
So there are a number of ways to do this. I feel like the most prominent one is probably using the societies to help out the sports teams. So I know speaking to some of the sports teams, they were saying that sometimes they struggle to get photographers. So you go to PhotoSoc, you kind of have that kind of exchange, and then they're more involved. This can then go on to having joint events, so not to do with necessarily kind of one person helping out the other, but actually as a friendly, let's get to know sports and societies as two different entities but coming together.
Okay, so Becky, you talk about introducing SU certificates, which are focusing on extracurriculars. Mm-hmm. Could you expand on this?
Okay, so when you're involved in a society in the Students' Union, it's often that you leave to go and find a job at the end of your degree. And you've done all these fantastic things, and committee members have done fantastic things. They've managed their time, they've led teams, they've a lot of the time managed finances, and all of those are skills which I think employers really, really want. But anyone can kind of, you've got a reference, but it's not, it's not very like official. It's just sort of like a friend who is pretty much in the society with you. And I think it gives it much more legitimacy if you can go to an employer and say, I was involved in this, keeps a track of what you've done, and it's stamped by the uni and the union, and you can hand that over to them, and then they'll be more likely to sort of ask questions about it. And that's when candidates can really like shine through all the things that they've got involved in. It's something that I feel really passionately about, that these students are doing these fantastic things and we should use everything we can to try and boost them in future.
Could you just take me through the system in which you would check this? Because, for example, if you went to Freshers Week, you signed up for a society, mm-hmm. and on your website page on the SU it says you are part of this society, this society and this society, yet you never went. What would you do to make sure that those people didn't end up with a certificate at the end of their 3 years saying that they've been involved in these societies?
Yeah, I didn't. The system wouldn't be like as simple as, you're just able to sign up for a mailing list or just join the society. I think you have to have like an active role in it, come along to meetings, hold a committee position.
Isn't this already covered by student awards at the end of the year though?
I don't think that it's covered by student awards, because I think there's a lot of committee members that don't get appreciated, and they still do a really good job. So I think that, if presidents of society is able to submit at the end of the year everyone who was involved, and they're able to keep a track of that, the biggest obstacle there would be keeping a track of all the society's positions. But if that's able to be overcome, then I think this is an absolutely fantastic opportunity to really boost the employability. And I think it's going to make societies more attractive as well, because if students know at the end of this, they're going to be able to go to an employer and say, look at all these fantastic things I've done. And then they've got something that, you know, sort of really backs that up, then they're going to be much more likely to engage with the society.
Realistically, though, is an employer going to look at an SU certificate? Isn't this the point of CVs and LinkedIn, which you can add media to, which sort of says, well, I've done this, here's the proof that I've done this?
I'm not sure that all societies have that kind of like media. There are some smaller societies, you know, you could have started a society and it's actually really small, but what you've achieved is really big. And I think there is some legitimacy if you know employers do look over like portfolios and things that you've been involved in. I don't think that many people would go to an interview, sort of hand over things that they think the employer will find interesting, and the employer just, you know, discredit it if it's got the university stamp on it and it's got the union stamp on it. You know, it's not going to not help people go and, you know, be able to talk about all the things that they've done. It's going to help them.
Tom, you talk about a name and fame award scheme. Could you expand upon what this is?
There's a real feeling amongst, you know, a lot of students that I know, and we've seen, you know, from a lot of the surveys, that there are people who don't like, who feel like they're, you know, being excluded, and then there's a negative culture, a lad culture, on campus. So what I'd like to do is, you know, either have an external organisation or a relevant students organisation run these lad culture workshops, highlighting the negative aspects of lad culture and how this excludes people from, you know, fully participating in the university experience. I mean, we always hear, you know, it's all, you know, late September, early October, such and such a university has had to ban, you know, such and such a society for, you know, they've gone on a night out and they've been chanting, you know, homophobic or racist chants. And, you know, that's not really what people come to university about. You know, people come to university to explore who they are, to, you know, reach out and see what they can do. And I think being excluded early on is definitely, you know, it's a horrible thing to do. So these workshops, you know, be highlighted to people that, you know, okay, you know, this sort of language is actually really exclusive. You might think it's a joke and your mates might think it's funny, but there are some people who this will actually be really, really harmful to. And, you know, it's harming them as a person, which is, you know, horrible. It'll be harming your society because you're discouraging members from joining and taking part. So this, you know, name and fame scheme, it could go alongside the gold and silver star ratings, saying that this society has taken part in this scheme, so they're doing what they can to, you know, have a friendlier culture on campus and have more people involved, which sounds good.
Stalking the Stars scheme, Emily, could you expand on your plans for this?
Yes, so I've had lots of chats with different societies, both who are in the process of getting their Stars awards, so gold or silver, and also societies that have got gold or silver awards. I think it's really important at the moment, if you get gold award, you get 10% of 10% off Red Oak Roller, and you get priority room bookings. And for me, I feel like it's not really recognising the actual achievements that these societies have put in to get that award. You have to do so much to do that, and it's a lot of commitment. So it's about recognising the actual achievements and being able to give back something that actually does recognise what they've done. So although what every society wants is more funding, it's not going to be possible, and that's sad, but it's what happens, isn't it? So I'm looking at kind of more events, so networking events as rewards, so specifically for gold societies, getting employers in, getting other like charity volunteering services in to actually network with these societies as something that is purely for them to say thank you so much for doing this. As well, the content that is needed to get the society, to get the award, and that's something I want to look in at as well. So I know there's a welfare event thing. Some societies have said we need help with that, so that links very nicely into my welfare and societies point. So kind of help societies kind of come up with ideas for welfare events, as well as kind of looking at what is involved also for different campuses. So I know SB Guild, they have a few gold award societies, and they were saying that some of the requirements to get that are quite difficult for them to do. So looking at that and saying, okay, how can we make this easier? Well, not easier, but how can we make it more catered for you guys, so that you can also partake in this?
Out of interest, a lot of people do think that the Stars awards favour larger societies. Open to all of you, how would you go about making sure that smaller societies got the recognition that they deserved as well?
Yeah, I think this is really important in kind of looking at what is required to get gold awards. It's about catering it to not only large societies but also smaller societies, because it's so important to get them engaged, and we don't want them feeling kind of like left out. And it's really important because they do amazing stuff, and the Stars award is something that recognises this, and we just want as many of them to have it as possible.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. I think it's about listening to students, what they need, not only the big societies, but the smaller societies need. And the way that students want their societies to be guided through by the STARS system, the kind of things that they want their societies to be achieving. One of the points on my manifesto is about societies trying one another's activity and sort of being rewarded STARS through that. Obviously, that works really well for some societies and others, you know, especially if you're part of like a media group, like, or I spoke to the mic and they said that might be like difficult for them. But it doesn't mean that society doesn't want to try another one's activity, it's just that their one's a bit difficult to do. So maybe like an information talk, just to give other people a bit more awareness of what they do. I think that's a good platform for smaller societies as well, sort of get more people along, so it brings the two together.
I think the points that have been made are really, really excellent. And the one thing I would add is that obviously big societies, you know, they can quite easily, even if they put the work in, they can achieve the gold or silver star ratings, and maybe have a different set of criteria for smaller societies. So based on how many members you have, if your society only has about 30 or so members, then maybe you have a different set of criteria. It's still pushing for the same sort of goals, but maybe a different way of measuring whether or not it's been successful.
So remember that if you have any questions for us, you can send us a free web text at urn1350.net. You can tweet us at urnpulse, or you can send us a Facebook message at urnnews. So moving on, there's always a lot of talk about an SU app. What's your opinions of this, everybody, and do you think it's a feasible idea? Tom, if we start with you.
Yeah, I absolutely do think it's a feasible idea, and I think it would be a far more practical way of letting students get involved with the SU than the website. I mean, the website, you know, it's very large and there's a lot of very useful stuff on there, but there are, you know, it's a bit clunky, it can be a bit difficult to navigate at sometimes. So yeah, having an app would be a lot more helpful, and obviously, you know, it's very easy for people to access on their phones and so on. Obviously, you know, I'd be carrying on the work that, you know, previous officers have done, and, you know, doing whatever I can. I've never made an app myself, so I don't know about the technology behind it. But, you know, this is something we could be reaching out to students as well. So if there are students who have experience in, you know, making their own apps, then we can invite them along and see what advice they have and see how they can help out.
Well, because I was on the welcome committee, I know that there was a welcome app that was brought out this year, and it had some information in it, but apps are expensive to make really well, and I think in order for an app to be used, it has to be made really well, because otherwise people will just go onto the browser and use that on their phone instead. I think that from talking to societies, what they need is actually the website to be made more mobile friendly, and I think that's potentially more achievable, you know, to make sure that it's easier to navigate. I also want to sort of make more use of the social media through getting our events out there through like calendars and stuff that people can save as an image on their phone. I think that an app is a good idea if the technology is there. I think it's a good idea if the funding is there to make it successful. I don't think it should be there if the app isn't going to be really what students need, because they will just go back to using the browser, and that's a problem at the minute. The website isn't very accessible, in my opinion.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Becky there. On my manifesto, I mentioned having a welcome app, and I feel like I put this down specifically for a welcome app to see on a smaller scale than a whole uni app how it would work, if you did do it right. I mean, I know people in first year who didn't really know about the welcome app this year, so clearly kind of promotion, I don't know how it worked really, but kind of making that better, making it more accessible, and also kind of with the small scale, then it does give kind of the pathway to making it a much bigger thing and actually spreading it out for the whole of the uni.
Is it worth spending all this time on a welcome app when it's going to be used for 1 week and then for the rest of the year it's going to be sort of redundant?
That's a valid point. I think, like I'm saying, it would be kind of a trial run to see whether an actual uni app would work. So kind of taking what went good, well, what went badly within Welcome Fair and Welcome Week, and kind of putting that forward to potentially producing a uni app.
So moving on, Becky, you say that you want societies to submit all their activities for an online email and social media system. Doesn't this slightly undermine the system a lot of societies have already of sending emails? And also this is sort of select, so you've joined that society and you only get emails from that society rather than every society.
Sutton Bonington already do this, and they said it's really successful because someone's able to see like exactly when and exactly where activities are going on, which aren't something that they maybe normally would do. So you haven't signed up for that mail list and you'll still get the information through. It's a choice. Societies can submit to that if they want. You know, all student groups can submit to that if they want. And it will basically go out like when you have the welcome program at the start of sort of Welcome Week. I don't see why we can't be doing that sort of like every month. and just putting it out through social media so students can literally just save the image or, you know, take the PDF or whatever, and then, you know, they can keep checking back on that. I think that maybe that's the best way of doing it than an email at the start of each month, because, you know, your emails get lost within the inbox kind of thing, whereas if you had like something a bit more visual and a bit more engaging, you'd be able to check back and think, oh yeah, this day I'm free, there's this going on, and I think it gives greater exposure as well to those societies.
Do you not think it could be slightly detrimental to some societies though, because obviously socials can be quite quick turnaround, you can organise a social in 2 to 3 weeks, therefore if you have a monthly calendar, they may not have the opportunity to put themselves on that monthly calendar, and therefore if this is the main system of getting the word out, people could miss out on those certain socials?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that it needs to be the main system. I think the other systems are still there, and obviously they are getting people there. Societies do a great job at promoting themselves. I think that this is just about giving like a little extra boost, really, and making it just a, you know, students that maybe don't always sign up to the mailing list and stuff get that information. And, you know, it's, there has to be a cut-off at some point because it does need to be made into a calendar. I don't know if it'd be feasible to make it sort of every 2 weeks. If it would, that would be even better. But, you know, I think we need to sort of look at realistically, like, when can we make that sort of document, you know, when can we market it? And I think that it should be in addition to the other things that are going on.
Emily, you talk about a forum section of Societies Council to organise inter-society events. Yet, realistically, aren't people already doing this over Facebook?
Yeah, you could definitely say that. But I think, so I am part of Societies Council and we do have a kind of face-to-face forum section of it. And it works really well. So people come in with a problem and they kind of put it to the floor, see whether anyone else is having this problem. And I feel like over the Facebook groups, there's not a continuity between all the societies. So it's about having a space, whether it's online, whether it's kind of like meet and greets, that kind of stuff, to actually discuss the issues that are facing societies in order to actually solve them quicker and better.
Tom, you also talk about an open forum to criticise, but isn't this already sort of been done in SU meetings already?
I think there is, but you know, say with the Societies Council, people only hear about it if they're if they're the president or chair or, you know, high ranking committee member of a society. I think having, you know, like a new set of open forums where any student can come along and, you know, air any grievances that they have with the SU, but also obviously, you know, societies representatives can come along as well. I think this gives a great opportunity to. You know, it's a different kind of open forum, so people can come along, you know, air the grievances, but also come up with any suggestions themselves. I think a great opportunity that this could be used in is with the redevelopment of the Portland building. You know, people are talking about how they, you know, Rob Jennings was on about that during the Portland review. You know, students have been allowed to, you know, give their ideas, give their suggestions for what changes can be made. But, you know, I know a lot of people who haven't heard of this at all. I mean, you know, up until I started running for this election, I hadn't heard of it either. So I think these public forums, you know, they can be advertised for online, but there should also be physical advertising for them as well. So whether those are, you know, like billboards on campus and so on, or on the notice boards in the Portland building, I think that an open forum gives more opportunity for ordinary students to pop in, you know, hear what other ideas are going on and how they can get involved.
So Becky, you talk about room bookings and wanting to improve this, yet we spoke to Rob Jennings a couple of weeks ago and he actually said that trying to improve this system was exceptionally difficult and wasn't something that he would necessarily recommend for a successor to try doing because it was just such a massive mountain. What's your reaction to this, and do you think you have the technical know-how to be able to improve this?
I think that in order to achieve this, it's about working with the university and working with IT. When societies want to book a room, currently they have to like email or they have to go in and book the room, and a lot of them were saying that that's really, you know, time consuming and they'd rather be able to just make meetings around when the rooms are free. But when they go to the staff that can book the rooms, obviously the staff have access to that layout. You have access to that if you want to book a study room at Horwood, you have access to that if you want to book somewhere for sports. So I think it's, I think that there must be the technology there, but I think it's about working with IT and the university to get it. It's something that is really difficult and that officers have struggled with, but societies are saying it again and again that this is what they need. So I think, and it also helped postgraduates find spaces to do things as well when, you know, all the other societies are away kind of thing, and postgraduate groups will be able to do that during the holiday periods. So I think it's important that we continue to work on it. Rob did warn me that it was difficult to do, but it was something that loads of people suggested that they needed, so, you know, why shouldn't you push for that? really.
So, Tom, you said that you wanted to open up online and physical notice boards for each category of society and student club to celebrate them. Could you please explain what this means?
Okay, so I think it'd be a great idea. You know, we have these long corridors in the Portland building. We see, you know, the pictures of the massive sports team. We have, you know, a big picture of our SU's officer.
Isn't this, in a sense, already there? They've already got the Gold Stars board there.
Yeah, but I think it'd be a good idea to have them across other places on campus. I mean, there are a lot of students who don't come to the Portland building at all. I mean, as something we've discovered during this campaign, you know, there's a lot of students who do come to the Portland building, but there's far more students who stay on the east side of campuses or to other campuses. So I think, you know, it'd be an idea to have these, you know, they could be like a digital billboard, but, you know, say on the wall of, you know, of the large rooms that people are normally waiting in before going into lectures and so on. And, you know, I think it'd be a good idea to say, you know, oh, this is what our campaign societies have been doing these past fortnight. And we can see, you know, whether it's, you know, something like the Living Wage campaign or, you know, there are people going around getting students registered to vote and so on. We can say this is what they've been doing over the past fortnight. And then, you know, after, you know, however long, you know, it fades into, you know, and this is what they will be doing, you know, in the next couple of weeks. It's got, you know, so you can go on whatever day of the week it is to help out with something else.
So the SU website, we talked about an app earlier, but the website again is something that comes up again and again. Becky, you said that you want to make the society section of the website easier to navigate, yet obviously realistically this website's had nothing really but criticism. Would it not be better to just have a complete overhaul?
Yeah, I agree. I spoke to sort of the people who are sort of like working to redesign the website, and it's in the process of being done. But I think that for an activities officer to say I want to completely overhaul the SU website, you know, I personally don't have any knowledge of sort of like website design, so that would be a very bold claim to say that I'm going to completely change the website. But what you do have the mandate to do, and what you can really push for, is that the section for, you know, societies and for people to find out about societies, and importantly for societies to be able to update their information easily and to be able to update you know, their own page. I think that is something that you can really like lobby to be improved, and to work with the staff who are already trying to make that website better, because it is a process, but it needs to be sort of guided in the way students want it to be.
And remember that if you want to send a question in to our candidates, then you can send us a free web text at urn1350.net. You can tweet us at urnpolls or send us a Facebook message at urnnews. So moving on, the Portland revamp has had so much publicity in the last 2 years. So under the Portland Review, to everybody, what would you look to instigate and how would you make it beneficial for societies? Emily, if we start with you.
So obviously, as you said, Portland Review has had quite a lot of publicity, and it's something that I had quite a lot of chats with when I was kind of creating my manifesto. And I feel like as kind of cliche as, or yeah, it sounds, it's for students by students, isn't it? And so you have to discuss with students what they want. It's about utilizing the space that we have and actually making it better. So what came out from my conversations were people wanted kind of small rooms for committee meetings, AGMs, that kind of stuff, but also large rooms like the hub, but kind of more of a vibe to it, I guess. So somewhere where you can relax in between lectures if you don't want to go to the library, but where you don't feel like you have to be quiet, but you can also take out your laptop and work. Those kind of spaces, and also obviously dance studios, that kind of stuff. So actually giving the students what they want, especially for societies, because it will basically be a SU space.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of the points Emily said. It's about making sure that the spaces that we're building are functional for all the activities our societies are getting involved in. I think also it's looking at like what is actually used, because if you look at the studio, that's brand new and it's not really that utilised, but then you look at the hub, which is old, and loads of students use that. So there is something about the hub that people really want to use, and I don't know if that's because it's maybe a more sort of like is something about the environment or they're used to it, I don't know, but you know, we really need to be making sure that we're listening to students as to what they need. It's like a meeting space. I agree with Emily that there needs to be a mixture of the spaces, you know, there need to be small ones as well as, you know, just these big huge open spaces, because and I think that's what the studio is good at as well. It's good that you can sort of create that space around you, and I see a lot of people use it for meetings. I would add that storage needs to be added as well to the Portland redevelopment. It's something that sort of societies struggle with, and it's something that, you know, if things are being built and things are being changed, it's definitely something that needs to be taken into consideration.
Well, this is a perfect example of where open forums, my idea of open forums, is going to be really useful. You can hear, you know, directly from students what do they want to see in the Portland redevelopment, and, you know, as long as it's, you know, it's practical and will obviously have actually a real use, and then we can actually implement that when we're redeveloping the building. So yeah, we've talked about storage, we've talked about society spaces, that these are things that people need. But something else that we could look at is making sure that societies who regularly use Portland at the moment, I think it's important that we make sure that they have, they're guaranteed replacement, spaces to use while the redevelopment is going on.
How feasible actually is this, seeing as, like, if you think about the amount of societies that are housed in Portland, where would you relocate them to?
Well, there's a lot of space in the Trent Building, and there's, similar size rooms, so whether they're, seminar rooms or, almost lecture hall sort of thing, and there's, the Trent Building would be a good opportunity to use that, and things like Keaton Auditorium, and there's a lot of buildings, there's a lot of rooms available in, Coates Road and so on. But we could also, this would be a good opportunity to expand to other campuses if people wanted to. So it'd be really beneficial for students who are, say, normally based on Uni Park. They could go to Jubilee and see what it's like there, and they can get more involved in things that are happening on Jubilee. But also be really useful for students on these satellite campuses who then, instead of having to, get the bus over to Uni Park or, take a big chunk of their day just for travelling to and from a society meeting, they'll be able to, have it, on their doorstep.
Speaking of other campuses, Emily, you talk about increasing collaboration with bodies like the SB Guild. How exactly would you go about this?
So I've visited the SB Guild quite a lot. I quite like it there. So it's about working with them to understand what they want from societies on Uni Park. So I know that they have this year introduced in their welcome fair, they've had some of the societies from Uni Park going over there, and they had a massive, massive want from societies here to go over there. And it's this want that shows that there is a want, there is a need, and what students kind of will go for is that greater integration. The SB Guild put on some unbelievable events. They just had their society's ball. They have a massive kind of fair type thing in the summer where they invite local businesses in, they invite local kind of residents as well. And I think it's this kind of sense of community, and that's what we need, and kind of working with them, I feel like we can bring that over to Uni Park and also kind of go over to them as well.
Becky, you also say that societies across different campuses, that you want them supported more. Do you not think that they're already supported?
I think that they need to be supported in the fact that we need to make sure that the students are able to access that from like all campuses, to be honest. When I was actually in Sutton Bonington speaking to some students, and some were actually saying that they really wanted to go to a lot of societies on University Park, as well as the ones in Sutton Bonington, but they couldn't. And I can imagine that's similar for societies on Sutton Bonington trying to reach University Park students. And I think that as well, a lot of societies, when they're based on either campus, maybe don't have the knowledge of what other societies are like on that campus, or the knowledge of their campus as a whole. And I think it's about supporting societies to have that understanding, to sort of, expand their own reach, because I think there's a desire to do it, like Emily said, but I think that we need to be giving them the tools to do it.
Tom, you talk about getting SU representatives on all campuses. What is the idea behind this? Is it the idea that each campus would have their own sort of SB Guild, for example, or are you talking about putting different officers on different campuses?
Well, I think it could work something like, the SB Guild, which, does a really good job. But it's just making sure that, students know that whatever campus they are on, if they want to organise something with the SU, they don't have to, either go over a serious, an exchange of emails or get the bus over to Uni Park. And there should be, an office there with, a couple of members of staff that they can talk to in person. It will make organising events, on the satellite campuses or, from one campus events from one campus to another, it'll make that a lot easier. But I think it also makes that, makes students feel more appreciated. I mean, during this campaign, we've had a look at some of the statistics, and it shows that, students from, say, Derby campus feel really disengaged with the SU. They feel like, hardly anything ever, hardly anything from the SU affects them. And I think this would be like a really good, way of showing that, no, all of our students matter, and they all have a way of getting involved.
So moving on, Becky, in your manifesto you talk about transparency and clarity in terms of funding. Are these not just buzzwords? How do you actually propose to instigate this?
I don't think they're buzzwords. I think that they're the aim, the overall aim. But that's why I've listed sort of ways that you're able to achieve that, because I think that there's no point using these big words if you haven't got ideas to sort of achieve them. One of the things I want to do is that when grants are sort of awarded to societies, I want to publicise like this grant has been awarded to this society because they did this. And that works in two ways. Not only does it celebrate what that society has done, it also then shows other societies, if you want to achieve this grant, this is the kind of thing we're looking for. And that's another thing that came up. A lot of people said that when there are grants available, they always talk about, oh, there's this pot of money, and they just send an email to all societies and say, you know, there's this money here. And there's not enough knowledge if they're actually eligible for it. A lot of the time people spend a long time putting in these grant applications and they were never eligible for it in the first place. And also with just applying for funding at the start of year as well, a few people said they had to sort of come down in the summer to university to make sure that their grant application was done well, and it was only because they spent so much work and they had kind of that support and that knowledge of how to apply for it that they were able to. A lot of people sort of like missed out and really didn't get the funding that they needed, because, you know, and that's why I want to bring in workshops to make sure that people know exactly how to apply. You know, there's a limited amount of funding, but we need to make sure that it's being allocated in the right way. And we should be supporting societies to do that.
Tom, you talk about wanting to give societies printing for free. How feasible is this, seeing as they already get a very big discount at the SU print shop? Isn't this enough?
Well, I think that, you know, there's a lot of things that the SU, you know, simply should be paying for. I mean, they talk about, you know, so we've got a community officer who's, you know, really, who one of their main roles is getting students engaged with the local community and getting engaged politically. But when, you know, I was in a society and we wanted to do a voter registration drive here in Portland, and we had to print off the forms ourselves. And then, you know, we wanted to print off hundreds of forms. We wanted to get as many students registered as we can. And it was very successful. But even with a discount, it still costs, you know, it still costs a lot of money. So I think this would be something that, you know, would actually help with the issue of funding as well, actually. So instead of, you know, giving, you know, the money to societies and, you know, hoping that, you know, well, knowing that they're going to be spending it well, actually, if there are societies that do have a problem with funding, take, you know, ease this burden so they don't have to worry about, you know, oh, we want to print off however many, you know, tickets or, you know, flyers or leaflets and so on. I think this is, you know, it's a really common sense way of the SU, you know, helping societies be active. And I think it will make a really profound effect on especially small societies who may have a problem getting funding.
Emily, you talk about having multifunctional rooms for people of different faiths. Yeah, we already have a chapel and a Islamic prayer room. So what else would you propose to instigate?
I don't mean like multifunctional faith spaces. Okay. I mean like multifunctional in the sense of like dance studios.
Oh, okay.
And kind of,
yeah,
like AGM rooms, that kind of stuff. Because I think it would be very difficult to fit, yeah, any more faiths in here.
Tom, you talk about interfaith and belief exploration. Yet we already have lots of activities like this already. We have Siwa Week from Hindu Sok and the CU Events Week. So haven't societies, faith societies, don't they really sort of cover this themselves already?
Yeah, they do cover it themselves. But, you know, say during, you know, the Islamic Society's Discover Islam Week, you'll only be hearing about, you know, that one faith, that one religion. The reason why I wanted an interfaith and belief, so, you know, not just religions, but, you know, things like UNASH, so atheists, secularists and humanists, people can come together, you know, they can see what's similar, can see what's different, but also they can make connections between the societies. So, you know, one of the ideas is one of the days during this week would be like, you know, say discovering faith through arts and culture, and that would be a really good idea, you know, seeing, you know, how does, you know, what is a really important part of people's life affect you and your background and culture, but also how it affects other people and you know, people from a completely different, you know, different country even. I think, you know, doing it between all the societies and having them do it together will help students who are, say, interested only, you know, they go into it only thinking, oh, I only want to be interested in, you know, say whatever the Jewish society are doing, but they can, you know, they can see what other societies are doing, what other faith systems, see what they're doing and see what you know, why it's so important to people.
Becky, in your manifesto, you talk about letting JCR know about any outstanding budgets. How exactly would you help them if they were already in debt from the year before?
So it's not just about debt. I spoke to one president who said that they had like a Sky Sports membership that they just weren't aware of when they came into JCR. So they can start making plans for their budgets. But then obviously a Sky Sports membership for sort of showing to a lot of people is very expensive, and it comes out in two installments. So they had a lot of money come out of their budget, and they were just like, where has this money come from? And then they were told sort of like, oh, you had a Sky Sports membership. That's not very difficult for them to have been told. There's also a few issues sometimes with like outstanding invoices and things that haven't been properly done from events before. And I think just making sure that when the JCR sort of take over, that they know how much of their budget is actually a reality. Because I think maybe it's sort of, it changes your plans quite a lot if you have all of this money come out. I think that it would, you know, they've already taken on quite a big role. It's their first year, they're in a JCR. We could be doing that as much as we could.
Tom, you talk about having food festivals in the first term, yet we already have quite a few of these. I know that we had a Malaysian food festival in the Trent building last term. So what are you proposing? Are you proposing to increase these?
Well, with the instance of the Malaysian food festival, that's clearly, it's only, you know, one national cuisine that's been discovered. My idea is that, you know, we can invite all the nationality societies, all the you know, food-based societies, so, you know, vegetarian, vegan, and cake suck, and so on. And we can even invite, you know, faith societies again, who have specific dietary requirements. And instead of, you know, it being, you know, you go and try sort of one cuisine, you can go along, you can, you know, try a bit of, you know, several different things. You can, you know, you can pick up cookbooks or, you know, learn the recipes of, you know, things that you've tried and like, find out where to source the ingredients from. And I think, you know, this would be, again, really beneficial to societies because people can come along. I think a lot of students will be interested by the prospect of free food. They can come along, they can see, you know, societies that they may have missed during Welcome Week. They can, you know, learn, you know, about other cultures' food and so on. Hopefully they can, you know, learn to cook for themselves. I know, you know, talking to a lot of, especially this is a problem that affects freshers and international students, is that, you know, they get a bit bored of the food on campus, you know, especially in halls. Then it gets repetitive. They don't think it's of a, you know, particularly fantastic quality. So I think this would be a great idea to, you know, it'll help them, you know, provide for themselves, cook for themselves. But also, you know, we can, you know, this could, you know, this could be expanded and help, you know, lobby some of the cafes and, you know, SU shops and so on into having a greater variety of food available.
Thank you. So for a final question, it's again a broad question to everybody. What are your stances on initiations in societies? Emily, if we start with you.
I think there's definitely, for societies, I don't feel like it's that much of a problem. I think it's definitely something that affects sports teams. Obviously, that doesn't come under our remit. And I don't really have much to comment on like the sports team side of it. But I think with societies, there we have such a broad range that it would be difficult to have kind of like one rule for initiations. And actually, to be fair, I don't even know whether it's a massive problem within societies.
Yeah, I don't. Any initiations that sort of make people feel uncomfortable obviously aren't in line with the university's policies for a good reason. Yeah, it isn't something that I really associate with societies, but obviously if they were found that, you know, people were being made to feel uncomfortable, put in situations that they didn't, you know, they didn't sit well with them, then that's something that we should be taking seriously and listening to those people's stories and sort of working to improve that.
Yeah, I agree with the comments being made that, you know, if there's any sort of I haven't heard that much about it. I mean, I've heard a few rumours, but, you know, nothing substantial, you know, about people take part in initiation ceremonies that make them feel uncomfortable. But yeah, this is something that, you know, I don't know for a fact of any societies that have this as a problem. However, obviously, if students are being made to feel uncomfortable to get involved, then this is clearly, you know, people are being excluded based on, you know, what they're willing or not willing to do or so on. And this is something that, you know, we need to be looking after the welfare of our students. This is, you know, one of the reasons why I want welfare officers in for each society. This is something they can make sure, you know, isn't happening.
You're listening to The Election Show on URN. Activities Officer.